Thank you. I'd like to call the meeting back to order. I'm going to ask a couple of our deputy registrars to step forward at this time. Thank you for coming forward. The reasoning behind this is we as a committee are trying to make sure that the action we take today is the appropriate action, and in order to inform ourselves as to what's been happening here, we're going to give the deputy registrars just a few minutes to verify to us that the transfer of this $93,000 will actually be beneficial based on their perspective on the current situation with Minlars. So whoever wants to go first, please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your perspective on, kind of want to keep it confined to this potential for this $93,000 to do some good within the system.
I'm Donnie Volzen from Deputy 7 in Brainerd. Regarding $93,000, and keep in mind this is more of a personal opinion, these people are working hard. From our perspective, though, we've only seen a minimal improvement because most of the improvements they're making is the back end. So all I can say is, yes, there's minimal improvement. If this helps with the 1.15 especially, which are so many things that we as deputies have asked for instance, edit and audit, for that reason, you might want to move forward.
Thank you. Would anyone else care to comment? Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Amanda Coppin, and I work at the South St. Paul License Center. I also sit on the Executive Steering Committee as well. I agree with Donnie. If this is going to give us some more money to get 1.14 or 1.15 out, to get some more capabilities at the deputy office, then I also agree that this money should be used instead of sitting in a fund somewhere being unspent.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Laura Laudenbach. I'm from Stearns County. I would also agree with both Donnie and Amanda. I'm part of the Executive Steering Committee, and I was privileged to be on the Stakeholder Committee where we ranked all of the items. A lot of the items were from all of our stakeholders throughout, you know, all users, I guess, and the items on 1.14 and 1.15 would be definitely beneficial. With that said, there's a lot of workarounds that we ranked that are not currently prioritized on the fixed list, and I don't know if those will ever get to those in the future. So,
thank you for those comments. Any questions for the deputy registrar, Senator Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To any of the three deputy registrars, DPS and Minute have described two releases, 1.12 and 1.13, that occurred this summer. And if I understood the testimony correctly, what they said was 50% of the stakeholders' priority requests were fixed by 1.12 and 1.13. Do you agree with that?
No.
Mr. Chair and committee, I believe the fixes, the 50% fixes, were to be done by the 1.15 release. The 1.12 and 1.13 were already in the works when we prioritized all of the fixes in the system. So that they weren't even ranked, 1.12 and 1.13.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Newman.
Thank you for that. Then I misunderstood, and I'll rephrase my question. The fixes that they rolled out on 1.12 and 1.13 on June 24th and July 22nd, are the fixes that they have described in their testimony this morning accurate? Are the fixes that they rolled out, are they in fact working?
Mr. Chair and committee, in 1.13, the deputy registrars were given the ability to issue duplicate titles in office, which was fantastic. We love having that feature added in our office where the customer can get the title right away. The impact of that actually is that all deputy registers who choose to use that service have to pay for their title stock, and they still get the same filing fee of $10. So we're getting the $10 fee, $7.25 goes to the state, and then plus we're paying an additional $35 for 200 sheets of stock paper. So yes, the fixes were good and they are working, but it's costing us more money in the end.
Thank you for that information, and that kind of piggybacks on some things we've heard earlier today, and something we will, once we are back in session, we'll have a chance to take a look at. Thank you for your testimony today. We'll go dismiss you for the moment. We may have more requests from you later in today's hearing. So thank you for stepping forward. Back to the department, and I just would like a little more information on 1.15. As to the timing and of how much this $93,000 is going to help with getting 1.15 rolled out.
Mr. Chair and members, 1.14 and 1.15 are scheduled to go on November 11th and February 3rd. Once those releases happen, the importance of keeping the contractors on is twofold. The first reason is to make sure that 115 goes into the system, is performing well, there aren't any glitches. If there are glitches, those glitches are taken care of. But knowing that a ramp down is imminent, absent additional funds, we also have to do a significant knowledge transfer. So losing those contractors any earlier than we already are will be very difficult to do that knowledge transfer to the people that would still be remaining to work on regular maintenance in the system and operations.
Thank you. Any other information at this time? All right. The chair moves that $93,000, as described in a letter dated from Minute Services to the chairs of this committee on September 11th, that the $93,000 transfer between these allocation areas be approved. We'll go to a voice vote. All members of the committee in favor of this signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The action is taken.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
We got about 3 minutes before my scheduled self-imposed schedule to get to the legislative auditor. A couple of quick questions. I'm not sure who wants to talk to them. We've already talked about the duplicate titles and the fact that deputy registrars are doing this duplicate title work for no further compensation, so we don't need to cover that anymore. I would like to dive a little deeper into this issue of background checks. I don't know who would like to address that. Ms. O'Hearn, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, sorry, do we have a specific question about the background checks, or you want me just to explain the
lay of the land? Just kind of explain
how
we got here and why the requirement is in place.
Yep. So we got here because Minnesota Statute 171.017 requires or states that in order to create or modify records for driver's license or identification cards, a person must undergo a background check. That was a new law that was passed. So in order to comply with that law, that meant that any individual, whether it is a deputy registrar, and they're specifically identified in the statute, as well as a DVS employee who has the ability to create or modify those records, must go through a background check. So deputy registrar appointments are required to be limited, at least limited driver's license agents. They can also be full driver's license agents. Driver's license agents are the ones who do driver's license transactions and have the ability to create a record if they are a full, or modify a record if they are a limited. So under the statute, a background check is required.
And When was this put into law?
It's part of the Real ID, so that was in
2017.
May of 2017. Yep.
But this is impacting all driver's licenses?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah. The statute is all driver's licenses.
And when did we determine that these background checks were going to be required?
Well, the,
when did you notify the deputy registrars that these background checks were required?
We notified them as soon as we were aware of the situation.
On May 9th.
Mm-hmm. So the letter went out on May 9th.
2018.
Correct.
Correct. Sorry, I had to think of the years there.
That's the year we're in.
Yes.
Any member questions regarding the background check issue?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jasinski.
So just something new that I didn't realize. So every employee at a deputy registrar's office, if they want to process a driver's license, now has to have a background check. Is that what you're saying?
According to the statute, yes.
Okay. And what is the process? Who pays for it? And how long does that take for our deputy registrars to get that done?
The deputy registrar's offices pay for that, whether they pass that on to their employees or it's the appointment. I don't know the answer, but deputy registrars pay for the background check. That is a check that is submitted through the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, who turns them around in their normal course. So a couple of weeks.
Okay, and do we have a follow-up? What's a typical fee for that per employee?
I am not entirely certain on the fee. I believe it is $35 or less.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Hansen has a quick question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, since this is a statute, I'm assuming that the legislature debated this in committee. I'm not on the Transportation or the Public Safety Committee, but these questions that are being asked now, I'm sure were asked, I would hope they were asked in committee or on the floor when there was debate on this. I mean, that's kind of the process when a law is passed, that you have this discussion publicly in committees rather than after the fact here. You're just implementing what we passed.
I don't hear a question in there, Representative Hansen.
Isn't that correct? You're just, Mr. Chair, you're just implementing what we passed. You're implementing what the legislature passed.
Would anyone care to verify the representative's correctness?
Mr. Chair, if I may, yes, that's correct. I would also like
that's
to make...
That's enough. We're going to move on.
Can I make a clarification to...
Please, but make it quickly.
I will. The question was when deputies were first notified of the background check, and I said May. That has been corrected. It was in March.
Thank you. Just one more quick item before we move to the OLA, and that is we have on numerous occasions asked for a detailed list of items which are not completed. The current number I have is that there's 138 uncompleted items that are not completed.
Workarounds.
I don't think this is workarounds. This is stuff that needs to be fixed, I believe. But if you can kind of elucidate or inform us as to what's in that 138 and let me know when I can see a list. Ms. Red Wing.
Mr. Chair and members, things that are not in that list are the ability to cancel a transaction after the cart has been paid, for in essence do a return on a particular transaction as opposed to a refund. Functionality to record sale information and retrieve it later. Build a fast track. Expand on editing capabilities. I can provide this body with the full outstanding list today. And I have a list of what's included from the master list in 114 and 115. It's an abbreviated list. It's a handout available here. I can get the full list out today.
Thank you. I would appreciate seeing that information.
Great.
Thank you for that. We're going to move on to a presentation by the legislative auditor. Welcome to committee. Is it just a little preview? This is the first of a series of legislative audits regarding MNLARS. This one focused on transaction accuracy, but I believe there are three more audits in the works. And if you could just, before you go ahead with this audit, briefly touch on the other issue areas that that you'll be looking into and we will be receiving reports on in the future. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Judy Randall. I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor with the Office of the Legislative Auditor. Seated up here with me is Scott Chumsland. He was the Audit Director on the MNLARS Transaction Accuracy Report. I also just want to acknowledge I'm fighting a really bad cold. I have cough drops and Kleenex and water, so just be kind to me, and I may need to pop a cough drop here or there. So my apologies in advance. Yes, Mr. Chair, we are working on several other related special reviews, audits, evaluations related to MNLARS and MNIT. Excuse me. One of them is a special review of MNLARS, where we're looking at the oversight, management, kind of what happened, how did we get to where we ended up with MNLARS. We are hoping to release that report in December or January of this year or the next. We are also conducting a program evaluation of MNIT that is focused on the IT consolidation process, looking at how well MNIT is serving state agencies, governance, communication, transparency, things like that. It's a pretty broad audit, broad evaluation, and we are hoping or planning to release that in February. And then finally, we are doing ongoing IT audits of MNLARS in particular, kind of lifting up the hood and digging in deep. Part of that IT audit review is to review and kind of comment on the quarterly reports that this committee, one of which you just received today. We anticipate our first review of that quarterly report to be available to members in the coming weeks, and we will let you know when that's available as soon as we have it ready. So those are the forthcoming reviews, evaluations, and audits. Today we're talking about kind of a financial audit, but a little more than that, so we called it a special review related to the accuracy of transactions within MNLARS. I do want to acknowledge the team that worked on this because they worked really hard and really dug into the numbers. So I'm going to have them wave Tracia Polden, Gabby Johnson, Alec Mickelson, and Zach Weisermans. They worked really hard on this. So again, the focus of this special review is the accuracy of transactions within MNLARS. The bottom line question was, were customers charged the right amount? So we focused on four broad categories of transactions in MNLARS, and we looked at transactions that took place from the launch date, July 24th, 2017, through the end of February 2018. Kind of jumping to the bottom line here, we found that, jumping to the bottom line, we did find inaccuracies across all of the types of transactions we reviewed, but the rates of inaccuracies really varied by transaction type. For some of the transaction types, there were very low rates of inaccuracies. In other words, most of the transactions in these areas were correct. On the other hand, we did find some high rates of inaccuracies for some types of transactions, notably the registration tax. First, let me just highlight the good news. 99% or more of license plate transactions, title transactions, and wheelage transactions were correct, meaning that we believe customers were charged the correct amount. I can point you to, I believe it's page 2 of the report. There's an exhibit S1, which kind of provides a summary overview of all of the transactions, the inaccuracy rate. So it just kind of looks like this if you want to see kind of some of the details about the rates of inaccuracies. So this is the good news. I think we can feel pretty good about this. 99% accurate is it's not 100%, but it's good. On the other hand, as I think you know, we did not find the same levels of accuracy with the registration tax for newer passenger vehicles. And we estimated that about 40% of these registration tax charges were inaccurate. So I'm going to spend quite a bit of time today talking about these transactions in particular and why we think the inaccuracy rates were so high. I do want to just kind of tip my hand a little and at a very high level talk about the reasons why there were inaccuracies, because there were a lot of reasons. I don't think there is kind of one bad guy related to these problems. Yes, we found some programming errors in MNLARS. We also found errors introduced by system users. We also found that the available data that's coming into the system from external sources is unreliable in a lot of situations. And then the laws are extremely complex and create some of the difficulties and also allow some of these bad data to persist and remain in the system indefinitely. So I've kind of looked at all of this and thought, well, it's kind of like a perfect storm. And we have a lot of contributing factors to why there were problems related in particular to this registration tax for the new passenger vehicles. So let's dive into the specifics related to that. It does get complex pretty quickly, so I just want to make sure we're all kind of on the same page and have the same understanding of the terms that are really important when we're determining registration tax. Also, I just want to point out, as I've been briefing folks in advance, I've been using this term registration tax, and people aren't necessarily familiar with what that is. It's the tabs. It's your license plate tabs. That's what we're talking about. So every year when you renew those tabs, you pay a registration tax. So that's what we're talking about here. Okay, so the first term is just a passenger vehicle. It's pretty much what you think it is. It's just kind of your car that you used to come to work, or if you used a car to come to work. But these are the vehicles, the types of vehicles that we're talking about, and the registration tax on these. Okay, base value is probably the most important concept for everybody to understand as we talk about this. It is the amount that a vehicle is, the kind of the value of the vehicle that's put into the system. This is the basis that state law requires we use when we calculate registration tax. It is the formula for it is defined in statute. It is the lowest manufacturer suggested retail price, MSRP, plus a destination charge, which is like the shipping cost. It is not necessarily the price you paid for the car when you bought the car. The MSRP is not necessarily that big number in the window of the car, you know, that sticker. It's not necessarily those numbers. Frankly, it's not a number that's easy to identify, to find, or to nail down. But that's what our statute says is the basis for the registration tax. And it's a really important concept. I want to talk about VIN, which is the vehicle identification number for cars made and manufactured and sold here in the U.S. It's that 17-digit number that uniquely identifies your car. A concept that you may not be as familiar with is the VIN descriptor. And that is the first 10 digits of your VIN. So if you and I own the same type of car, if we both own a, I don't know, Impala, I don't know cars very well. If we both own the same car, our VIN descriptor will be the same. So the first 10 digits of our VIN will be the same. And then the remaining 7 digits will have other information that uniquely identifies my vehicle from yours. But the VIN descriptor, again, identifies a certain make, model, and model year of a given vehicle. In Minnesota, base values are established at the VIN descriptor level. So a base value is not established at the level of my car versus Mr. Chumsland's car. It's established at that higher level of make, model, and model year. So really, the interplay of these concepts are really important because this gets complicated really fast, and a lot of it is determined by, a registration tax is determined by the base value and the VIN descriptor.
Ms. Randall, if I could just interrupt for clarification. So that 10-digit VIN descriptor does how much, you know, if I, there's, I'm going to take a pickup, for example. If I buy a pickup that has very few features on it but is a particular model year and model of pickup as opposed to one that is loaded, a term that is often used in reference to the number of features on the vehicle, would those two have the same MSRP in this system?
Mr. Chair, thank you so much for the question, because I meant to touch on that and I overlooked it. The lowest suggested MSRP is supposed to be that value, not counting the options and the kind of add-ons. So you may have leather seats and I may not have leather seats, but we should have the same base value on our VIN descriptor.
So when we're comparing how these vehicles are valued for MSRP and license purposes, it is that base value, not including the options.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. And if you'll just bear with me for a moment, I will read what the law actually says directly, because this is in the law. So it's Minnesota Statutes 168.013, subdivision 1A, paragraph B. Base value means the MSRP of the vehicle, including destination charge, using list price information published by the manufacturer or determined by the registrar, if no suggested retail price exists, and shall not include the cost of each accessory or item of optional equipment separately added to the vehicle and the suggested retail price. Okay. But thank you, because that was an important point. So I'm glad you helped me remember to say it. Okay, so let's talk about how registration tax is calculated. And just as a reminder, so registration tax is calculated differently for a vehicle's first 10 years of life versus versus after that. After that, it's a flat rate of $35. The first 10 years, it's this variable rate. The formula appears for the first year, where it's $10 plus 1.25% of base value. Remember, base value is that lowest MSRP plus the shipping cost. Every year from, you know, in year two, this is discounted 10%. Year three, it's discounted 20%, et cetera. It discounts until then year 11, you go to that $35 flat fee. One of the really important things that we kind of based our analysis on is a concept that if you and I own the same vehicle with the same VIN descriptor, you and I should pay the same amount in registration tax. Just like if you and I earn the same income and had the same deductions and exemptions, you and I should pay the same amount in income tax. So did I say income tax twice? Well, the first one was, if you and I own the same car, we should pay the same amount of registration tax. So we kind of base our analysis on this premise of a fair, what we consider to be a fair tax. If we own the same vehicle, we should pay the same amount of registration tax. So again, because registration tax is calculated using the base value for a given VIN descriptor, in a perfect world, we would have a one-to-one match. Each VIN descriptor would have one base value, so that everybody who has the same first 10 digits in their VIN is paying tax based on that same base value. I know I'm repeating it a lot, but I think it's important, and I want to make sure we're all kind of on the same page. So, what did we find? Well, we found a high rate of variability among the base values for a given VIN descriptor. And as auditors, we consider that variability to be inaccurate. So that's what we consider to be an inaccuracy. So again, we're thinking that you and I should pay the same tax if we have the same vehicle. But variability of the base value for a given VIN descriptor means different people may pay a different registration tax. So we found an example that we think really kind of highlights the variability we saw and also, you know, a lot of the concerns we have. And this is the Ford F-150 model year 2018 pickup truck. During the scope of our audit, there were 2,055 people who newly registered this vehicle into MNLARS. Again, based on the concept that these people should all be paying the same tax, there should be one base value for these 2,055 people. Instead, we found 130 different base values for, again, these VIN descriptors, the VIN descriptor that should have the same base value. The range was surprising, ranging from a vehicle that was assigned a base value of $2 to one that was assigned the base value of almost $70,000. And again, that base value is what, you know, is the main factor in calculating registration tax. So as you can imagine, somebody who has a $2 base value is paying a different amount of registration tax than the person who is paying or whose value is at $70,000. I will point you to the bottom of page 12. You'll see this same exhibit there. But at the bottom, also, it shows kind of how much that person would pay over the 10 years of paying the registration tax if they had the $2 base value versus that almost $70,000 base value. Almost half of these vehicles were assigned the same base value of about $43,000. Based on the best information we could obtain, we think the true value, base value, should be $38,925. There were no vehicles with that base value. I think the main point here, well, one of the main points, is that there's a lot of variability, and that leads to different people paying different amounts of tax. So as part of our audit, we tested a sample of 300 vehicle registration transactions, for vehicles newly registered in Minlars. Again, here's the calculation for registration tax. And these were our findings based on, again, that 300 sample that we could then statistically extrapolate. So the first row that you see is what we're calling the initial base value, and I will explain that. So we found that that was inaccurate in Minlars for about 70% of the transactions we tested. That's a high number. That's a high percentage, right? That's not something that we see very often. So why is that, right? I mean, what can explain that? Well, there's a lot of reasons for that. One of the first reasons is that the base value amount is not reliably available for the first 6 months to a year of a vehicle's life. So I could go out, buy a vehicle, go to my deputy registrar to register it, and the manufacturer has not provided that base value information yet to DPS. And what I'm told is that it takes routinely 6 months, a year, sometimes even longer. So when we say this initial base value was inaccurate, often what that meant is the system simply didn't have the data, and so would return a zero. So the way the process works is when the manufacturers do provide kind of the true number to DPS, eventually it gets populated into a reference table in Minlars. So I come in to register my car, Minlars pings against that, it's not there yet. The next thing that happens is Minlars pings against a third-party vendor automotive database that the state contracts with. It's called POLK, P-O-L-K data. They don't always have it. So then the next step is deputy registrars, they need to find a base value. So then they're instructed to go to the dealer to get the information, or to use a reputable pricing guide like Kelly's Blue Book or NADA, one of those pricing guides. So that's kind of the process. So the initial base value being inaccurate at 70% is alarming, but it's not necessarily something that Minlars could be programmed to do better, right? The data just, in many cases, simply aren't available. The next row of this table, what we're calling the final base value, is after deputy registrar intervention. So the Minlars maybe returned to zero because they didn't have the data yet. The DRs go out and they do their best to find a correct base value for that car. Now, clearly, the DRs intervening improved. You know, it lowered that inaccuracy rate. I will note that in our sample, DRs also introduced some errors. We saw examples where DRs entered in the odometer instead of the base value, or entered in the weight of the vehicle instead of the base value. So yes, overall it was an improvement, but it's not like that was perfect either. And so then, not surprisingly, because the registration tax is based on this final base value amount, we get to this about 40% inaccuracy rate of the registration tax. So there's a lot going on there. I will note, and I think this is important, in October 22nd, there was an update to Minlars that addressed kind of how the base value is displayed in the system. It used to be, prior to the update, the deputy registrars would just see one value. They'd say, okay, this is the base value. And they couldn't see whether destination charge had been included or not. After the October 22nd update, it now shows both pieces, so DRs can see if the base value has both that MSRP number and the destination charge. We did see an improvement overall in the inaccuracy rates after that update, so I'd say our final inaccuracy rate went from about 40% to 30%. So it's improvement. It's still not where I think we think things need to be. So how does this affect customers? I think you're not going to be surprised, because I know you've been hearing about this all along, that some customers were charged incorrect amounts. Our sample testing identified both over and under charges, so these inaccuracies affected people in both directions. Up here are kind of some of the bigger numbers. A lot of the over and under charges were small. But nevertheless, as auditors, you know, we think any of that variability is not how we want this system to be working. I will also note something that we've talked about at previous hearings, is that under current law, those customer undercharges can't be corrected, at least if you read a strict interpretation of the law, states that a person can't be charged more for vehicle registration tax than was previously paid on that vehicle. So, with a strict reading of that law, those undercharges persist and remain in the system. The overcharges, I think, is up to the legislature how you want to handle that. I think it's really important to note that the problems with base value predate MNLARS. This is not a problem unique to MNLARS. We actually have financial audits that our office produced more than 20 years ago identifying base value as a problem, and that we had concerns about the validity and reliability of that data. You know, it's coming to light now, of course, as part of all of the looking into MNLARS, but this is a problem that has been around for a long time, and is kind of the intersection of the way Minnesota calculates registration tax and reliable data available from manufacturers and other parties. So I think that's an important aspect. All right, I know I've hammered on a lot about the registration tax. We do talk about other things in the report. The law is incredibly complex, so all of these issues get really detailed and really complex really quickly. We did find inaccuracies across these other types of transactions. The inaccuracy rates were smaller and overall affected fewer people, so I wasn't going to spend time right now talking about them. They're covered in the report in chapters 2 and 3. Certainly happy to answer questions about them if members want to, but I think I'll let you all ask questions about those if you want. I do want to talk a little bit again about why we're in this predicament, why we have these inaccuracies in MNLARS. And as I said in the beginning, you know, there are a lot of factors. And the Ford F-150 example, while kind of, I don't know, it's an easy thing for everybody to grab on, I think it really exemplifies all of the problems coming together. Right? So we start with the law that requires us to use base value. We have bad data initially on base value, and so users have to intervene, and they introduce some errors too. We have some programming errors, mostly related to other of the inaccuracies we found, but I will note that the system allows some of these errors, allows users to make some of these errors. Clearly, a $2 base value for a brand new Ford F-150 is wrong, right? I mean, I think we could all, I don't know exactly what it should be. I mean, I guess we do now from the report, but if I'm a DR, I don't know exactly what it should be. I know it's not $2, right? So somehow that error got in, and somehow the system didn't raise a red flag or say, are you sure? You know, I mean, if you think about all the online forms you fill out where they question something you enter, you didn't fill out your whole phone number, you didn't fill out your whole social security number, you know, there's those flags that pop up, say, please double check that. So I think the fact that some of those limitations aren't in place in the system means that we're not getting help preventing some of those user errors. And then those errors are allowed to persist. I've said this to, I think, some of you. I think the thing that concerned me the most out of this whole report is that OLA found that $2 Ford F-150. You know, it shouldn't have happened in the first place, or the system should have caught it, or some type of quality assurance either at DPS or in the system should have caught it. I just don't think it should have persisted until OLA caught it. And that's the thing that concerns me the most, is that those types of problems are in the system and are somehow allowed to remain in the system. And so that's where we get some of those data integrity problems. And then we circle back, frankly, to the complexity of the law that doesn't allow changes and allows those problems to persist even further. So again, I think there's a lot of contributing factors here that I think we all need to take a look at. So let me quickly jump to some of the recommendations. We have a long list of recommendations in the back of the report. Many of them are very specific because some of the issues we identified were very specific and detailed. Just going to do some of the high-level ones here right now. So monitoring the accuracy of the information, I think I just harped on that enough. We do think DPS should correct base values with updated information when that information is reliably available, and that may need legislative interaction or intervention to allow DPS to correct those base values and change what people are taxed going forward. You know, let's make sure any of the programming inaccuracies that we identified in this report are corrected. And it would be great, I think, if the system could have some more controls in place to, again, raise a flag when clear errors are introduced. For the legislature, again, we think the legislature and the department should work together to ensure all vehicle owners pay the correct amount of registration tax. There's a couple of ways to approach that. I mean, one may be saying, okay, reliable information on base value is not available until year two. Okay, fine. But then the legislature could give DPS the authority and the responsibility at year two to set, you know, the true base value amount and then have people taxed on that going forward. You know, alternatively, the legislature could reconsider using base value as the basis for calculating registration tax. That's a big task, but other states do use other things. Some states use weight, some states use sales price, I think, some states have a flat tax. There's a lot of ways to approach that. You know, that's a big job, and if you want to tackle it, you know, we're happy to help however we can. But then we also recommend that the legislature consider just simplifying this whole section of law. It is incredibly complex. We identified areas where we had some different interpretations than the departments, and I think kind of streamlining and simplifying this section of law could benefit all of us. With that, Mr. Chair, I will end the formal part of the presentation. Happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ms. Randall, for your presentation. We appreciate you bringing this information forward and the hard work you've done to put the report together. Quick question myself. How much variation is there in this destination charge that's part of this value calculation?
Mr. Chair and members, I don't know that we could isolate the variability among the destination charge as opposed to the base value as a whole, but I do know the complication of destination charge definitely contributes to some of this problem.
Well, I assume, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I assume that it's not the same for every vehicle. Depends on where your dealer is located, is what I'm assuming, that the further you are from the place that the vehicle's originally delivered in the state or perhaps outstate, that you're charged accordingly as to how long it or how far it is to get it to your dealer.
Mr. Chair, yes, that's my understanding. I think DPS would probably know better, but yes, the destination charge varies based on where the car is manufactured and where it's ultimately delivered. It's the shipping cost.
Mm-hmm. So those of us that live in the further reaches of Minnesota might be paying a little extra on our registration tax just because of our I love this head shaking. That's great. No, it's wonderful. It informs my questioning. So I'm getting a head shake that's not my location that makes the difference.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Jasinski will elucidate this.
Just in coincidence, I called Jason Wetzel from General Motors on the specific question, asking him some questions why we weren't getting base values and some of those things, and I talked to you about that as well. And his comment from GM standpoint was that most of the destination charges are the same throughout the United States. So if you have a car that comes from Detroit and goes to Arizona or a car that's built in Detroit and goes to Florida, they're about the same other than Hawaii and Alaska. And that's General Motors' standpoint on destination. They're all pretty much about the same as what I've heard from General Motors, just on that end. I just want to add that in because I did talk to him yesterday.
Excellent. Thank you. I had a misunderstanding of that. Very good. Other member questions? Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also want to echo my appreciation for your hard work and, you know, another excellent OLA effort here. I'm interested in knowing a little bit more about this, the problems that you cited with the MSRP. You know, it seems that there's, you know, a lack of timely information from the manufacturers that's contributing to this. What could the manufacturers be doing differently in order for us to help correct this problem.
Ms. Randall.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein, they could get us information earlier. I don't know, to be honest with you. I don't know why they have such difficulty getting us that information in a timely way. I do think that's something DPS might have some better insight into.
Follow-up, Representative Hornstein.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I guess I would be interested. That seems to be one of the cruxes of the problem here.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Randall, I want to talk about the base value problem. And if I understood you correctly, the problem with determining the base value is a problem that has predated Minlar's. Is that correct?
Ms. Randall.
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, yes, absolutely.
In your audit, were you able to determine approximately how long this problem has lingered?
Ms. Randall.
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, no, I can't tell you precisely how long this problem has lingered, but I can tell you that we issued a financial audit in 1995 citing concerns about base value.
Senator Newman.
And so at least since 1995, a DPS has been either, in some instances, either overcharging or undercharging the motor vehicle registration tax. Would that be a fair statement?
Ms. Randall.
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, I can't tell you that for sure. What I can tell you is we saw variability in this audit that resulted in overcharges and undercharges in registration tax. We think that's largely due to problems with base value, and there are problems with base value for a long time.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Newman.
Ms. Randall, in your audit and in your conversations with folks from DPS, were you given any kind of an explanation as to why DPS had not come forward and disclosed this problem?
Ms. Randall.
To the legislature or anyone else?
Ms. Randall.
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, I wasn't given a satisfactory answer to that question, but I do know they're behind me, so I'll let them answer that question.
Then, Ms. Randall, I'll phrase my question this way. If you didn't receive a satisfactory answer, what question did you ask them, and what was their response?
Ms. Randall.
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, we suggested that if DPS knew that base value was an unreliable value, then that they should have come to the legislature and talked with you about it. And it was their position in that conversation that wasn't their role. But again, I feel like I'm walking on some thin ice, and I'd prefer that you direct those questions to them if possible.
Thank you, Ms. Randall. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Someone with a cold should be very careful about thin ice, I think. I don't see any other member questions, but I would like to bring the department forward at this point for a response to this report. Thank you for coming back to the testifier stand. I believe you've seen this report prior to today, and so I would like to hear what you have to say. Who wants to go first? Or would you rather that we ask questions?
I have some comments on the report, Mr. Chair, if you would like me to do that.
That'd be great.
Mr. Chair, members, so let's start with, we really are appreciative of the legislative auditor's work to illuminate the complexity that surrounds vehicle delivery services in the state of Minnesota. It is complicated. And the report, where it does highlight system gaps, we are committed to working with DVS, MINITIS, to ensure enhancements to the MNLAR system that will help reduce the incidences of data inaccuracy. But there has been significant progress on the system since the period of this audit, which went through February 2018, from the date of the original launch of MNLARS. The report rightly notes various system updates that have occurred over the last year to resolve some of the defects, as well that contributed to some of the data inaccuracy found during the audit period. But to be clear, the majority of the inaccuracies asserted in this report are not, and as you heard, not the result of MNLAR's malfunctioning. It's not the result of the IT system. Rather, it's really reflective of the differences in interpretation of statute, human error in data entry, and misalignment between the unique Minnesota laws and the automotive industry practices across our nation. In particular, the report, I think, highlights how the combination of several of these factors contribute to a high degree of variability in the vehicle base values. And those factors are really hard to capture into any system, such as the unavailability of those authoritative base values from the industry for a newer model vehicle, the frequent changes to the base value that are made to that base value, even after it's established by the manufacturer and the changes they make as part of that, the inclusion of that destination charge to a vehicle in its base value in Minnesota, which is base value plus that destination charge, which is unique, as I understand, to the state of Minnesota. The variability in data by the system users who need to have the ability under current law to input a base value themselves when one isn't available from the national data service provider. And what may not be very clear, I think, on the first reading of the report is that MNLARS does not calculate a base value. So let me restate that again. MNLARS does not calculate a base value. Rather, it pulls that data from a table that is provided that's the DVS approves base value. And when there's no approved value, because it doesn't exist within the industry, that base value is pulled from a national service, and that service actually is called V-Intelligence, that receives that manufacturer's suggested retail price from the manufacturers. But in some cases, V-Intelligence has no base value either. It's not there. And in those cases, a dealer will record a base value, or a registrar will have to determine a base value using a reputable pricing guide, where there's some variability in interpretation. All of this underscores the complexity in applying unique Minnesota law to national automotive industry standards. And while it may be easy to ascribe the auditor's finding to an IT system that isn't properly functioning, such analysis really would fail to recognize the actual factors at play. These factors include the delay that occurs in car manufacturing publishing the MSRP amounts, and those amounts being changed by the manufacturer over time. Uh-oh, I'm in trouble. Another factor called out in the report, the data. Thank you.
I hope you're not on thin ice, Commissioner.
Usually with this committee, I am, Mr. Chair. Another factor called out in the report is that the data entry errors, as much as data in the MNLAR system, is input by people. And whenever people are involved, no matter what the best of intentions, mistakes are made. And lastly, the report identifies statutory differences between the interpretation between DVS and the OLA. And while called out in the report as inaccuracies, they are in fact differences of interpretation, often unclear statutory language. Let me be clear though, I do take these findings very seriously, and I find the findings serious, and I'm committed to doing whatever needed within my power as commissioner for Minute to improve that MNLAR system. But we can make all the systems improvements in the world, and I can do everything I want to this system. We can rip MNLARS out and put in a new system, and it's not going to fix it. It's not going to address the majority of findings in this report because their cause is deeper and more fundamental than the IT system. What we need is greater clarity and alignment between state statutes, statutory interpretation, and the realities of the automotive industry. At Minute, we stand ready to work with the legislature and the Department of Public Safety to clarify those laws, to manage the complexity that make the system changes accordingly that we can make, but we have to do that as a team. So with that said, thank you for the opportunity to respond to the report, and I would be happy to answer any questions that I can answer.
Thank you. But first, I'd like to hear from DPS. Ms. O'Hearn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to echo what Commissioner Clyburn has already said, and provide the Department of Public Safety's commitment to working with the legislature and with Minute on ongoing improvements to the system, things that we can do to work with system users to ensure that the information being put into the system is as accurate as it can be, and certainly with working with the legislature on issues regarding the motor vehicle laws to create more uniformity if that is what the legislature chooses to do.
Well, thank you for that. Frankly, this is alarming. If citizens have a right to anything from their state government, they have a right to be treated fairly. And this, to me, is an unfair situation. When these values have such wide variation, whatever the reason, this should be brought to our attention. And if we as legislators fail to come up with a fix, then it's on us. But personally, at least, had no clue that there was this kind of variation in this base value calculation. I knew there were some issues with the rollout, but I had no idea that there was this variation across multiple vehicles across multiple years, resulting in mischarges of thousands of dollars for the citizens of Minnesota, both overcharged and undercharged, because we were unable to accurately identify the space value. It's very upsetting. The question I have for you right now is, why wasn't this highlighted sooner, and why did it take an OLA report to bring it to our attention?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Department of Public Safety strives to comply with Minnesota law. When it does so, it has to assume that the lawmakers intended the language that they have passed into law and have then charged the Department of Public Safety to administer. Within the law that establishes how to establish the base value, there are different methods allowed. So that variability, if the goal was that there could only be one base value, there would only be one method to calculate it. But the statute itself allows for multiple ways to calculate or to arrive at that base value.
So you're telling me that you believe it was the legislature's intent that a Ford F-150 pickup be valued somewhere between $30,000 and $70,000, and that we would be happy with that situation?
Mr. Chair, I do not know what the legislative intent was when these statutes were passed. My understanding is that the variability issue was raised by the OLA in the 1990s. It's long before my time. I don't know what the intent was, but I do know what the statute says today.
Well, it's long before my time here at the legislature. It is part of my time on Earth, but really, I think we all have a responsibility that we should treat our citizens as fairly as possible, whether we are state employees or state legislators. I'll pass to Senator Newman. Thank you.
I can't believe what I'm hearing. The DPS will come in and say, if that's what the legislature wants to do, part of your job is to give us guidance. If a statute is subject, that a statute that we have passed, when put into practice by your state agencies, is subject to various interpretations, I will tell you as a lawyer, and I guess that Commissioner Clyburn would agree with me, that statute should be fixed, because the statute should be clear and people should be able to understand what it says. If our laws, if we make a mistake as a legislature and they are so complex that DPS can't implement them in a fair manner, I think DPS has got a responsibility to come back to the legislature and say, you made a mistake, we've got to fix this. For DPS to essentially take a Pontius Pilate attitude and say, it's completely on your shoulders, the legislature, it's not our responsibility as a state agency to give you guidance, that's just I can't believe that you're actually saying that. You know more. DPS knows much more about any of what we are talking about, be it vehicle registration or MNLARS or the taxes and how you know way more about this stuff than we do. And for you to sit there and say you are not going to give us guidance and allow something that has gone on for decades without coming to us and saying we have got a problem is pure malfeasance on your part. And I think it's a fair criticism for the legislators to look at DPS and say, you have not done your job.
Rep. Senator Hornstein.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Clearly, we do have to fix this, as you said, Senator Newman, and I think we do have to fix it as quickly as possible in the next legislative session. And we would look for some guidance on that. And I think that the second thing we have to do is if Minnesotans have been overcharged, then we need to somehow figure out what that remedy is so that they're made whole. That's only fair. I know that Representative Hansen has some ideas on that that he's put forward. But we have to do two things, Mr. Chair. We have to fix this problem. Potentially and likely in statute. I'm very, very concerned about the inability to you know, have accurate and consistent calculations for valuing automobiles. But I also think that we have, I think there's valid concern about if people were overcharged, that they at least in the short term are able to be made whole to the greatest extent that we can on that.
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, I guess I was, and I think in all fairness to DPS here and your testimony here, Ms. Olson has been with DPS a lot longer than you have. And maybe I've got some questions for Director Olson, if I may.
Please identify yourself for the record.
For the record, my name is Don Olson, and I'm the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services.
Thank you, Ms. Olson. Just again, following back and some of the things that you heard today as well from the auditor's report, I have the same reaction as a lot of my colleagues here. I've been in the legislature just finishing up my fourth term, and I would also agree that as much as we need to all own where this is at today, because I'm the current sitting representative here, we own a complex system. We have to fix that, but as Senator Newman has said, you live this and breathe this every day. You are absolutely the state experts on this, and I think as a director, Ms. Olson, I guess maybe my question might be, have you come to the legislature before even MNLARS was certainly launched, but prior and while it was being developed, did you tell the legislature at any point in your leadership that we have serious issues with complexities, with base values, and so on and so forth? If you could give me sort of some background there, because visiting with prior to Commissioner Clyburn, Commissioner Baden had said, we have serious issues with the e-support system and the integrity of the system. If he was talking openly about that prior, I'm kind of curious, what was your direction and your communication to us prior to MNLARS?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I will try to, there were a lot of questions in there, so I might have to circle back. I have been in this position for 3 years in January. So I haven't brought that forward in my tenure as director of the division. Knowing that base values has been a complicated process for many years, a big part of what makes that base value complicated is that destination charge. Minnesota is unique in having a destination charge added to the base value calculation. We are probably one of maybe two states in the country that uses that formula. I know that anytime legislation needs to be proposed, it generally goes through a process. It's brought forward, it's discussed. There are many iterations that potential legislation goes through. So I can't say that it hadn't been brought from before. I don't know to be honest with you. I do know, though, that there have been several times in committee hearings through testimony that we have talked to the legislature about how complicated our system is. And the OLA report confirms that. And it runs the gamut. It's not just base values. It's 1,200 fees that we charge for license plates, the various places license plate fee goes. And I know today we're talking about base values, and that's fair, but the whole licensing and registration process that we do have in the state of Minnesota is highly complicated for a variety of reasons. So while I can't speak that I have done that or I brought that forward in my time here, there's been obviously a lot of things that we have considered, and we are open to having these conversations with your legislative body if there are others that you would like us to contact, if there's information that you would like us to secure, because all states struggle with the same kind of calculation formula on how to collect registration tax in their states. And I think it's fair to take a look at what might be options around that. Minnesota just happens to be one of those states that was unique in using an MSRP plus destination charge.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up again, and I think you've been at DPS for more than 3 years, however, maybe just 3 years as director, is that okay?
That's correct.
So as we were building this system over the last 10 years with somewhat HP at the beginning and then so on, I think what this is a horrible example of agencies getting so deep with their head down in the sand that during that 10 years, we don't have a lot of evidence, at least from our standpoint today, and maybe other reports will come out through the Office of Legislative Auditor to see where the leadership derailed this thing. But I just want to make sure that taxpayers see this transparency that we're trying to get down into about why this had to get so bad. If our e-support system was better at the beginning, that still was your responsibility and your team's responsibility prior to Minlars. So I just hope that after all of this and all the pain and the financial hardship it did, and we've collected $1.9 million more than we should have from folks that bought a vehicle in Minnesota that were overcharged, according to the report. That was the other way around. So we've actually collected more than we should have in a lot of folks. So we just need to make sure that everything is right going forward. I stand ready to work with the department, but this just can't continue like it is. Thank you.
A quick question. Does anybody have an idea what the kind of the ballpark is for the destination charges on any given vehicle?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the destination charge varies based on manufacturer.
I know that, but
so
just give me an idea of the ballpark.
Some, it depends on the manufacturer. Some can be as low as $800 per vehicle. Some can be as high as $1,500.
So given that range of $800 to $1,500, that's about a $700 variation. We've got the variation on these total vehicle base prices in tens of thousands of dollars. And I realize, you know, Minnesota maybe is out on its own with these destination charges, but that's a tiny portion of this overall problem. So to blame it on that, to me, seems a bit unreasonable. Representative Hansen.
Thank you.
Guest Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for letting a guest speak. In front of you, you have a copy of a draft bill that I think provides a little bit of a path forward. I'd ask you to take a look at it and distribute it. You know, I think during this whole discussion today and really for the last several months, the question always comes up of who's at fault? Who should have known what? Who should have done this? Who should have done that? And I think for folks watching at home, or at least constituents, they boil down to how does this affect me? You know, how does this affect me? Was it my lucky day and I was undercharged? If it was, we have the testimony, we have existing law that says that under current law, that registration is going to stick with them because they can't be charged again for that lower than anticipated fee. For those that paid more, they're wondering, everybody's going to wonder, did I pay more or did I pay less? So we're in a situation here where we're not in session. We have no ability to appropriate new money. We're not going to be in session until January, and it may not be any of us in the House. We could, it's a new legislature. So how do we make things happen? What you're doing, Commissioner, to try to deal with us not being in session, to make things continue to work, I applaud you for that. We have to make things work for Minnesotans. I think what we need to do is try to make things work for Minnesotans, because their logical question is going to be, did I pay more? And how do I get that back? I realize that it'll take time and effort and people to determine that for people, but I think we should do that. I think we should try to compensate or reimburse people for that overage. I know that that will take money to do that at the same time that you're trying to fix the system. We want to fix the system so there aren't future overcharges, but we also want to make sure that those people who were there get reimbursed. And so the bill, that's draft bill that's in front of you, would assume that we have a special session tomorrow. We know that that's not going to happen, but perhaps there would be a special session after the election. I think we have a number of loose ends in a variety of areas to tie up. And so I would ask, if that does occur, and often special sessions occur on a short notice, that you're ready for some specific proposals to tie up these close ends, to make the system work for Minnesotans, and to make sure that there's fairness for those Minnesotans who paid too much to be reimbursed for that overcharge.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. I do not have any other questions at this time. I would just add that I hate to agree with Representative Hansen, who is not a member of this committee, but
I like it when you agree.
Yeah.
In general.
Yeah, it doesn't happen very often, does it? But, you know, this is a real issue, and as I stated earlier, citizens have a right to be treated fairly and consistently, and this has not been happening, and it needs to be addressed ASAP. I would just like to give, I don't know if the deputy registrars have more to say today, but I promised them that I would give them time, and I gave them a very limited amount of time earlier, so I'm going to bring them back at this time. While they are stepping forward to the testifier stand, I apologize for running over our allotted time. I don't think will take too long. If anyone else wants to testify today, we have not been contacted, so I believe this is the last agenda item for the day. Welcome back to the committee stand, and identify yourself and go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Again, my name is Laura Laudenbach. I'm from Stearns County, and I would just first of all like to address that the system has come a long way from last year. Now, with that being said, 2017 to 2018 was a very, very challenging year on all of the deputy registers and the state as well. The motor vehicle transaction time is increased in offices, you know, between 2 to 5 minutes per transaction, even for a simple transaction registration renewal. To give you a little bit of insight into the fast launch as of October 1st, we're very excited. They have done a really great job presenting the program, giving us some training that works. It's exciting to get through the system and finish a transaction. With that being said, on Monday, we will launch Real ID in Minnesota. An average driver's license transaction, standard driver's license transaction in the FAST training system takes an average of 5 minutes, and that's what it takes today in our regular e-support system. A Real ID will take up to 15 minutes per transaction due to the examination of the documents that the customer has to provide. Whether they do a pre-application or not, the deputy register is still responsible for those documents to come in and make sure that they're not fraudulent. We also have to lock that paperwork up in a safe directly after. We are going to be getting $8 for the current standard driver's license and $8 for a Real ID. If you think about the current system, if we're doing a standard driver's license, a staff member can process 30 an hour, making over about $240 for the deputy office. With a real ID, it's only about $4 per hour, which is about $30 for a deputy register office. So we're hoping in the future this might be something to consider. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Anyone else among you care to make any further comments at this time? Any questions from members for the Deputy Registrar of Estates? Senator Dzinski.
It's not a question. I just want to reemphasize my concern over shifting the costs and the work to our deputy registrars. This cannot be overlooked, and we have to address it. It's going to put our deputy registrars under. So I cannot stress that, and I'm concerned about launching this on Monday because of what it's going to do to our deputy registrars. We have to stop it. Now, we've been talking, we went through testimony on the previous with base values. We've been going on since 1994. We have to stop this, and we have to stop it now. And we have to come up with a plan on how we address that, because we cannot shift more work and more costs and not compensate these small businesses.
Thank you, Senator.
Representative Torkelson.
Mr. Vossen.
I'd like to add to that comment. Something the audit did not cover is the thousands and probably thousands upon thousands of years of experience that have been lost at our level, let alone the state level. We have lost so many good people through attrition, early retirements, and people just throwing up their hands and quitting. That is part of the audit that is not there, but it is hurting us additionally.
Well, thank you for that, Mr. Vossen. You know, we've heard these stories. We are committed to rectifying as much of this as we possibly can as soon as we're back in session. It will take some time, and I know it's hard to be patient when you're overloaded with work and undercompensated, but I believe I speak for the entire committee when we believe we understand the problems, and we will do what we can to help rectify this situation. I see no other questions at this time, no other comments from the registrars. I'd like to thank everyone involved with the committee hearing today. This has been a challenging day. We've had to deal with what I consider some very bad news here. I wish we were in session so we could react more quickly. We are not, but I trust that those of you that are involved in the administration of state government will do what you can to rectify these issues in the short term, and we will address them in the long term. With that, members, we are adjourned.